Okay, great. Thanks, everyone. Welcome to Verifiable Credentials for Education Task Force. Today's going to be another working session, but first I will lead us through the boilerplate material. We'll do the IP note, call notes, introductions, reintroductions, and then we'll dive right into the working session. IP note, anyone can participate in these calls. However, all substantive contributors to any CCG work items must be members of the CCG with full IPR agreement signed. And you can join at the location I'm typing into Zoom. Ensure you have a W3C web account. It's just a simple account. You don't have to pay or anything at this location. And then the text of the W3C community contributor license agreement is available at this location. Call notes. These minutes and a audio recording of everything said on this call are archived and available in our meetings repo in CCG. I need to update these call notes. We use Zoom to at the moment to cue speakers. So just raise your hand if you have something to say. Our telecommunications infrastructure is still under development, so apologies for the difficult transition, but right now we're just using Zoom until we can get things stabilized. All attendees, no, I need to update that too. Okay, so the call instructions are a lot easier right now. just raise your hand or just type something in chat if you have something that you want to say. Okay, let's get into introductions and reintroductions. Anyone new on the call that wants to introduce themselves? Jaehoon, am I pronouncing that correctly?
Yes, just call me Jay.
Jay,
Hello,
welcome.
folks. I'm Jay from LGCNS. I am the host of SSI Meetup Korea, and also I am the lead translator for DID 1.0 and Verifiable Credentials 1.0, the official documents into Korean. And I am currently interested in this VC Edu just a few weeks ago. From now on, I'll be joining this call regularly. Thank you.
Fantastic. And actually, if you could, my email should be available through CCG list. We're interested in starting up staggered time zone meetings. So I realize this is probably very inconvenient for you. So I'm curious to hear what times would work better than others. So great to have you. Anyone else new to the call? Okay, let's do some reintroductions real fast. Let's see. Jack Son, would you mind reintroducing yourself?
Hi there. Yeah, Jack Sohn here, based out of Washington, D.C., CTO and co-founder of Learning Economy Foundation, working to advance 22nd century ready education infrastructures and working with many of the folks on this call. So happy to be here.
Great. Thanks for joining, Jackson. So I think with that, we can move on to the working session. Okay, yes, that's the one. So let's start with issue number 17. Because I think that some of the discussions in it will address the other issues. So this one has to do with the scope of this draft spec and level of granularity. Just for context on this, we ended up, Anthony Camilleri gave us a PR to talk about some specific use cases. We have some comments in there. Phil, I only late yesterday noticed Phil's comment, which I think will address some of my concerns. Some of the scenarios, specifically, I think the scenarios mentioned in the spec do not seem to address completion of a course, and I realize I can be screen sharing and I'm not, so I'm going to do that real fast. Okay. So just for context, let's see, what did we end up with? Okay, right. This is the part that we were discussing last week, which is the concepts requiring definition in an educational context. So again, our goal with this document is trying to relate verifiable credentials to existing EDU standards and really demonstrate just how to use them in verifiable credentials. But we want to ground that in certain use cases. And the ones that we've identified so far, describes an activity a person has undertaken. Actually, I think that my program course scenario would be included in this. Learning outcome or skill, outcome of a formal assessment process, and then a membership as well. So Phil gave a suggestion about, let's pull that up again. Okay, can you see my new browser window with Phil's comment? Hopefully.
Yes.
Oh,
yes.
Okay, great.
Yes.
Okay, so this was, so I think for context, the thing that I was struggling with is how to relate some of the schema.org entities, and I'll show the example that I came up with. But basically, he introduced this entity I was unaware of, action and its subtypes. And I was curious to hear more about what we could use this for. So Phil, can you talk to your comment here?
Yeah.
Phil Bark, for that is, sorry.
Yeah, thank you, Kim. I'm very happy to. I mean, first of all, just a little bit of context as to, you know, why I made this suggestion and why I was talking about the things I was talking about on the last call. And that's that I'm very keen that we don't reinvent anything or any way of doing something that can already be done. So I think, you know, looking at use cases is definitely the right place to start. But as soon as the use cases are articulated, I'd like to think that we can look at whether it's possible to fulfill those use cases with things that already exist. And only when we're certain that we can't do that, do we start thinking about, you know, new properties and new ways of doing things. I was a little bit worried that if you start trying to articulate solutions to use cases, you might set along a track that leads you to believing that you need to create something new because what you see that exists doesn't match with the way that you thought about trying to solve the use cases when you were articulating them. So I wanted to jump in as soon as possible with, you know, what I think is a way of fulfilling the use cases that have been articulated. And that is using the schema.org actions hierarchy, which allows you to talk about things that have been done. And that seemed to me to meet the requirements that were being described by Anthony on the last call. Yeah, and you know, I understand that he was very, you know, sketchy about what the precise requirements are. And likewise, I've not gone into a great deal of detail in these examples that I've given. Kim, do you mind if I share my screen? Because I actually did a little bit more this morning.
Sorry, yes, please, that would be great.
Okay, let's try and find the right screen to share. Okay, can you see that now?
Yes.
Okay, so I realized that the example that I put into the GitHub issue used the perform action to show somebody writing a book. That's because I was thinking about the example that we'd been talking about of, you know, performing Beethoven's Ninth Symphony or something like that. If you're actually talking about a book, then the more sensible action to use is the write action, to say that, you know, this action has happened where somebody wrote a book, and the somebody who did the action is the agent, the person. And the object of the action, the thing that was done, is the book. So that means that as well as having the simple relationship between a book and a person, in that the person is the author of the book, you can use this write action to say some other things, such as provide a description, say when it was done, say what language John wrote the book in. There's a whole hierarchy of these actions, so there are other possibilities that are available. So, you know, one other thing we've spoken about is how to say that somebody has a skill. Well, you can say that, you know, Asha has achieved a skill using the achieve action. And again, you can use the properties of the achieve action to provide a fuller description of it, to provide it, you know, the date when she achieved it, and so on. And also to point to tools that she used in achieving that skill. Another simple example is of achieve action is achieving an educational and occupational credential. So we can say that, you know, Lee has a particular credential, and that credential, you know, you can build out the description of what that credential is, but you can also use the achieve action to provide more information about how she achieved that. I'm not sure whether Lee is female or not, actually. And I've done built out an example based on some of the things that Kim suggested over the weekend. For example, you can say that Lee achieved that action using this educational and occupational program as an instrument. It seems a little bit of a strange term to use, instrument, but when you look at the definition of instrument in schema.org, it's the thing that helped somebody to do something. So that seemed to fit in that, you know, it was this program that helped Lee achieve the credential that she has. And again, you know, you could put things like dates or fuller descriptions onto this achieve action. So that's just briefly an outline, you know, just to alert people that there is this hierarchy of actions that can be used to provide the contextualization and summaries of things that have been done, which I think meets the sort of use cases that Anthony was talking about. So I hope that we don't have to we don't have to create too much that's new here. The one thing that I think I will point out is that in several of these, the relationship between the action and the person is pointing in the opposite direction. It's, you know, focused on the action and saying who was the agent, who was it who did that. Whereas I think for verifiable credentials, it's often more natural to point in the other in the other way. So, yeah, I'm not sure what the implications are of that when it comes to creating instance data that can be wrapped up as a credential. But I'm sure that there are sort of minimal solutions to that, even if it's just creating a reverse property for agent. So I'll stop sharing there, and I'll shut up, and happy to take any questions about this.
Fantastic. And thank you for introducing that concept. We have a queue building up. I'm not sure if Nate or Leonard were first. I'll just
Leonard was first.
Okay, Leonard, you're first.
Okay. So I feel that was very good. And conceptually, you know, certainly I think it's the right answer. I think my biggest problem with it is, to be honest, the use of schema.org terminology. Because unlike its name, there are no schemas associated with it. And I worry about something, you know, especially when we want to have that context in our credentials, you know, we need to refer to a specific schema. We need to be able to verify that data. To use something that's not schema, that's not versioned as the background. So that's my biggest concern. And I will point out that there's another, just as another option, the other standard that we could go with is XMP. I'm putting a link in the chat pod. So there is a similar concept in XMP called the resource event. And it works very similarly to the way you were describing actions. So it'd be another possible option. So that's just what I wanted to bring up.
Yeah, there is a context file for schema.org, and there is an RDFS definition of schema.org. That there's no JSON schema definition, and you're right that it is somewhat problematic with respect to versioning, though there are specific versions that are kept of the RDFS schema.
Nate, you're up next.
Cool. Phil, you touched on what I was going to talk about right at the very end of what you were talking about, is that the arrows were pointing kind of in the wrong direction in your diagram, and that in order to package this up as a verifiable credential, we might need to introduce something like a reverse relationship that points to one of those actions from either the EO credential or from the person, that they have action or something like that, if that any useful metadata would be included in there. Do you have any thoughts on, like, has that sort of thing been done before? Is that an easy and recommended path to go down in order to be able to include data about a person?
Some schema.org properties have reverse properties. That there tends to be a little bit of pushback because, you know, it's not really in the model to try and create a reverse property for every prop. You know, there's a bit of pushback against doubling the size of what is already a fairly large vocabulary by creating reverse properties of everything. But I think if we can show that there's a use case that will require that their property goes in the opposite direction, then you know, we can make that case. I toyed with the idea of did as the reverse property. You know, this person did this action, and then I realized that we'd probably run into problems with the other meaning of did, DID.
Carrie, why don't you go ahead, and then I'll do mine.
Sure. Just a couple of things. I think this is really great to think about, using existing schemas. I don't have a lot of experience about with using schema.org, though in the past I've always sort of had this struggle with us trying to like shoehorn education into the schemas that exist. Because although I believe in using the existing schema so we can share that, have that standard, it always seems like a struggle. What triggered me thinking about this more was like instrument. An instrument's a fascinating one because there's things that we use to achieve things, right? Tools, but there's also skills, right? So we have certain skills and those contribute to the achievements, not necessarily that we achieve those skills while achieving those achievements. And I always just sort of wish we could have it's sort of like when you have a dropdown and someone says to choose your industry and you can never choose education technology. I kind of want that. I want a schema for us someday for this work, you know?
Yeah, Kerry, I think it's a big part of my life struggling with that problem.
Oh, I know. Yes, I'm sure.
I'll go next. So actually, for context, I want to share my screen. And this is an example of a bad idea. But this is why I'm finding Phil's proposal especially helpful. So I had something I wanted to express where basically, I realized I was trying to, this uses schema.org concepts. And, so say I have a verifiable credential that's expressing credential subject schema.person has credential schema EO cred. And hopefully, I think you can see my screen. But what I wanted to do was relate that, this credential was awarded as a result of this program, which has courses and course instances. I wanted to express things about when they attended the program and things like that. So I noticed this navigational problem. And then also, does this mean that we have to reverse that problem? Then also, what does that mean for, all of the other concepts that we might want to add. So I like Phil's suggestion. I'll stop sharing because this is a bad idea. I'll stop sharing. But so I like the suggestion about action. That seems to be the general concept that we want. My only concern at this point was like the navigation problem, but I agree with you. Like if we can sort of make our structured case to schema.org about what we want to represent. Maybe that will have a chance of being adopted. And I think this partially relates, Carrie, to your point. So I think I've found myself wanting to rely on schema.org as sort of the backbone of verifiable credentials, because it does have really nice properties in that, you know, so there's no schema yet that we can really pick that isn't sort of perceived as like biased to someone's use cases. And so schema.org, if we can make it work, seems like the best neutral candidate. And so that's why I think I've been very keen to try to make schema.org work, because it seems clear, for example, like in the LER mapping tool, for example, things like credential engine registry and CTDL, other concepts there can be aligned to schema.org. So I think like one of the most valuable things we can do in this group is sort of pick something, and schema.org seems to be a good candidate, like pick something that's sort of this neutral vocabulary or perceived as neutral as possible, and tell how to weave other ontologies, vocabularies into it. Let me see, we have Marty on the queue.
Yeah, so I wanted to share some of the work that we've done in the North Dakota CoLab, and where we've actually implemented the framework of the VC wrapping the CLR standard.
Great, yeah.
So if I can share my screen.
Yeah, you should be able to.
Okay, so this is the work kind of collaboratively with North Dakota, PCG, IMS Global. And so we're using the open source CLR wallet here, but we have modified it. The Randa team has modified it to then implement the VC wrapper as part of this set of credentials. And so what you'll see here is this is the verified credential wrapper with the signature proof. The beauty of it is that, and the learner publisher, but the beauty of it is that within the groups of assertions, we can actually package the evidence. And so this is a base 64 encoding of the PDF transcript, which is what North Dakota needs to deliver to consumers upstream, but it's completely encapsulated in the JSON. So there's no external references within the set of credentials, because we're still working through how these individual assertions can also be verifiable credentials. But for the purposes of kind of the foundation of the project, this is the entire 66 assertions are wrapped in a single verifiable credential. So I just wanted to share that as a use case that we're implementing with North Dakota.
That's great. And are you using, I was assuming that you're using the LER wrapper sort of approach that I linked to here for wrapping the CLR in the VC?
Yes.
Okay, cool. Okay, that's great. Let's see if we have anyone else in the queue. Okay, Phil Long?
You can call me P1 if you like.
P1.
I like the schema dot, using schema.org where possible. The question that it raises that is addressing Carrie's concern, and I have it as well, is that there are certain uses of concepts that it is ambiguous in the current and schema.org definitions. So Phil Bailey mentioned using instrument earlier to represent a course or a program. And while I get the idea is definable by virtue of the way instrument is described in schema.org, it seems, at least in the educational context, very different and has some meaning that we need to disambiguate. So that's where, so I like the idea. And the question is, how do you, where we find these things where a program is actually, in your example, Kim, a complex set of stacked ideas in it. How do we differentiate that or get that either integrated into schema.org or deal with that problem in the context of schema.org? Thanks.
Well, if I can comment on that too. So I think I only recently started looking into the LER mapping tool, but I think to your point and possibly to Nate's point as well, like I think that that mapping tool really helps us kind of not worry so much. So yes, it is nice that schema.org is viewed as neutral, but I think like, say if we like the issuer, the definition of issuer that a certain framework provides, then we have a means of mapping that around to other frameworks. And so I think that will largely be informed by the kinds of use cases that we encounter as well. Nate, was there anything you wanted to add? You had a good comment in Zoom.
Thanks. Just to have the comment be on the audio channel. What I'd like to see is one of the things that I thought that this group could work towards sort of from its forming, which is that interested parties who want to play a role in the educational credentials space and want to use the verifiable credentials data model can put together sort of a wish list of what they would choose from the verifiable credentials menu, one or two selections at each layer of the different verifiable credentials sort of tech stack, all the different pieces that go in there. And that includes the recipient identifier type, you know, how we're identifying the recipient, what the claim is, you know, what's the assertion schema, what the defined achievement schema is, if we can agree that this concept of a defined achievement that someone has earned is a useful shared concept. For example, we might choose Open Badges Badge Class for that, how the issuer is identified, what the proof type is, what the signing key type is that's associated with that proof type, and what's the method of associating that key with the particular issuer in a somewhat trustworthy way. And then, of course, the larger and maybe hairier problem of how do you associate the issuer identifier with the actual real world, you know, brick and mortar institution that that it attempts to describe. If we can get the use cases in the format of, I would like to do this use case with this menu of selections for each of those layers, then I think we can start putting together pilot partnerships where we actually, you know, put the rubber on the road.
Yes, that's great. And Keith, you're up.
Yeah, I just had a question about the gentleman who showed the North Dakota example of using the LER wrapper. I was just wondering if you could talk more about what kind of wallet, VC wallet, were you using? Because I think we're continuing to look at this concept, but I think it runs into other problems in that, you know, in VC world, we want to handle things like selective disclosure. And then there's all these different methods for proof request, proof response around the, you know, challenges and response. And when you just wrap a third party object like a CLR or an open badge in a VC, those things become very difficult to handle. So I was just wondering if they could talk more about how you're handling that VC.
Right. So this is kind of the initial version of what we're presenting. So that's just a web presentation. But our goal is to actually individually wrap the assertions within that CLR package. Our challenge with a lot of, you know, the wallet architectures out there is that as many assertions that occur in K-12 would be very, very difficult to individually assert to a wallet. So we're trying to basically encapsulate an entire single transaction wrapper of the CLR assertions and then allow the user, by signing them individually, allow the user to selectively disclose individual assertions. So that is in the path forward. We're just not there yet.
So I think, let's see, I'm trying to think of next steps for this. I think I'm definitely interested in pursuing what schema.org action would look like for what we're trying to represent with these use cases. I think we're still working through getting the list of use cases we want to address for this document. So I think that once we feel more confident about that, it would be good to come back to our options and revisit that. Again, not all of the modeling, not all of the examples in the modeling VCEDU credentials have to use the same approach. I would like at least one that's a solid schema.org based example, because it does seem nice and flexible for tying to certain things. Like certainly some of the credential definitions in Credential Engine Registry, it seemed like a really useful way to do that. But we'll keep working on that. So I think that other issue that I had was sort of addressed by this discussion. One thing I wanted to get to, this gets more into wallet types of discussions. Let me make sure I pulled up the right one. Okay, let me pull up my screen. And for context, the two remaining issues I have, one was image integrity. The other one was to kick off the discussion around learner did methods. And so that one, it's just mostly to orient you to what's there. But so we've talked about this one a bit. So the problem of image integrity, and this one's come up a fair amount in the past. I wanted to sort of refine the requirements here, because I realized that we were kind of packing a lot of concerns into what we were calling like display integrity, because there's sort of two different things. There's the scenario that human verifiers will want to know that some image does represent, the thing that got the JSON or whatever payload that got verified. But then also there's a separate concept of, maybe different visualizations for different form factors. Like say in a wallet, you might group credentials by an issuer's logo. You might have preview images of the credential. And so there's those considerations as well. Our goal in this task force, I believe it will be impossible to say there is one way to do this, because I think we're seeing every method that I call out below, which I'll talk about briefly, is actually in use right now. And I think that they're all valid ways to go about it. I think what would be useful as a work item is giving a general framework to help discover this information. And I think that that's largely useful for things like wallets. And so some of this may move into the wallet spec. Some of this may be more domain specific, but let me just quickly talk through the methods. And actually I'm realizing already I left one out, which is embedding the VC in a PDF. So these methods are describing VC-oriented methods. So those would include embedding in an image or HTML directly. So the one that we just saw from the North Dakota example is a Base64 encoding of that document. So similarly, that's a way that people use Base64 encoding. And so the main thing is the idea being that the verifiable credential is signed. So therefore the image by being in the credential or any other display instructions being in the credential are signed too. So if you view that thing that you extracted from the credential, you know that that's what the issuer intended. The next approach that's similar to that is using a link or URL with a hash. So there's a schema in a work item in CCG that sort of captures that called hash links. And the idea is that you're not necessarily cluttering the VC with all of this stuff, but you can get some kind of notion of, yes, that's the thing that the issuer meant to issue because you have the hash in there. So you know if the image has been tampered with. The next category is templates. So this would be like, you generally, you know, with this kind of credential, these are the fields you expect to be in it, or, you know, within the credential, it links to some kind of template definition of, you know, this is what one would expect to be in it. And then there may be renderings associated with that template. Then the other one I wanted to call out, because I think that I saw that Nate had included it in later versions of the Open Badges Validator, which I think is also very interesting. So this is the case where it's like a credential card view. So something that's like not really the image of the credential, but it's plucking out the key metadata for display to a human verifier in a credential, what we call credential card view. And that's sort of like in Apple Wallet, for example, like just the display of certain fields. So, you know, per credential type, you could say these are the fields that you want to just make sure that the human verifier sees, in addition to the image, which maybe you're worried could be tampered with. And so let's see. So again, these are, I should clarify, these are verifiable credential as container methods and include also the idea that, yes, there are other methods that sort of embed it all in another container. So like PDFs and everything. So I started, and this is more to kick off the conversation subsequent meetings. So I called out some design considerations, and I think that the work involved with this will exist at multiple levels. None of them are changes to the verifiable credential spec. These are just more about, some may be in a wallet, some may be sort of conventions among certain types of credentials. And I included some what I call design inspirations for, you know, so this is the case where, what am I getting at here? So like in wallet type scenarios, there's some notion that sometimes designers like constraints. So the idea of like, okay, tell me how to get my credential in your wallet. Like, give me the information I need to know to work with. Like, like, for example, if you're designing a pass that goes into an Apple wallet, they, you know, there's all these conventions about how you bundle it and how you put it in there. And so it's, you know, some constraints, but it tells you like, okay, these are, it's working on two levels. One is like, this is sort of the human experience that we want to deliver, and here's how you get your content into that. The other example I thought was fairly interesting was the EPUB spec. That is a W3C draft spec, and it defines like, you know, any the EPUB format, which could include things like, you know, certain metadata that will be expected, you know, by convention, and, you know, certain images and navigation. And so this is an example of like within a certain kind of use case, these are, you know, patterns that emerged. Let me see if there's anything else in that. I think, so those are the patterns. Where does it live? Like, I think we're going to have to, again, there'll be several things going on here, some of which will probably live on outside of this group, some we might want to take on here. So yeah, I wanted to kick off that discussion and sort of add a little bit more structure to it as we go forward. It looks like there are chats happening. So let me see first if there is a queue.
There's not a queue.
Okay. There are comments that I've not caught up on. Anyone who's commented have anything to add?
I mean, I'll verbalize what I was typing if you want, Kim.
Yes, please.
Yeah, so this is Leonard. I was just commenting that, I mean, hash links are wonderful. We use them for a number of things, but you have to remember that hash links only ensure that the data they point to is unchanged. They don't necessarily ensure that what that data will present to you is unchanged. And my point was simply that if you have HTML with a script in it, or we were just talking about SVG with a reference to an external image, that doesn't, you know, it doesn't go along. There's no transitive property of hash links. So those, you know, those remote images or external images or the functionality of the script isn't guaranteed just because the data is unchanged. So that was all I wanted to say.
You're talking about the, so hash link, it's like a URL with hash of the content that it's pointing to, but certainly within the content it's pointing to, like there's no, you'd have to do extra work to make sure the transitive links are also hashed is what you're saying.
Exactly.
Yeah. Exactly. Yeah,
or in the case of SVG, I was pointing out that there's a reduced profile called SVG native, which has no scripting or no external references. So if you did like SVG native, a hash link to that, then that, yes, absolutely, you'd know it was a guaranteed verifiable presentation.
Exactly, yeah. Dimitri, you're on the queue.
Thanks, I just wanted to, so I agree with what Leonard said. And I wanted to underscore what you mentioned a little bit earlier about, I think best thing for us as a group is to focus on a general purpose mechanism, basically a link and a contents type or a way to embed. And then the group and the ecosystem can explore, what do we want to do for static visualizations? Do we want to just link or embed a PNG? What do we want to do for dynamic ones, meaning a template based? Do we want to do SVG? Do we want to do PDF or anything else, right? But as far as the data model, it'll still be the same object. It's like, there's the content type, go.
Yeah. Yeah, I do think there's value in having some kind of generalized notion for that. Just, it seems like a lot of people are starting to stumble into that individually. So and I think that this is a really large problem to solve in its entirety. So we just have to pick what's most blocking our use cases here. Overlays, Keith, do you want to talk to that?
Yeah, I mean, I think as wallet designers, I think often we can actually determine how credentials are viewed, how VCs are viewed within wallets, if, you know, as long as there's some standardization among the VCs. I think where what comes very helpful is things like UI overlays, because I think as soon as you start running into things like localization and stuff like that, some of those problems become very difficult. So I think UI overlays is the direction we've gone to, where we thought that can help standardize how you view stuff, especially across countries and stuff like that.
Yeah, thanks for
can you say if,
yeah, go ahead.
Sorry about to interrupt. Can you say a few words? What is a UI overlap?
Basically, you know, metadata on top of the credential, which kind of defines, I mean, if you look at Paul Knoll's architecture there, I mean, it's quite in depth. I mean, for our architecture, it's just more like, you know, you can customize attribute labels within a standardized VC. You can do localization of attribute labels. It's more of the simple things, but also, you know, you can choose, like, you can show preferences, like when you display this, you should use this title as title one, title two, that kind of stuff.
I think I've seen it used like in some sovereign based implementations, and specifically the blinding identity taxonomy, which was kind of an interesting thing, you know, saying like these fields are constitute PII. And so depending on the use case, it would be blinded. Let's see. I don't think there's anyone else on the queue. So let's keep going on that one too. Feel free to add your comments in the issues. And then the last one I wanted to get to today is learner did methods. And I was glad to see that the DHS SVIP program is also working on that. Okay, let me share my screen. Okay, DIB methods and EDU use cases. This was proposed by multiple people. About a valuable thing that this group can work on is explore which DIDs can be useful in EDU use cases and in different scenarios, like say for the issuer and for the recipient. Marcus Sabadello pointed out that there was further work on a DID rubric document, sort of criteria for evaluating DID methods in the area of security and privacy. So I want to encourage people to look at that if you've not seen it before. I also added some notes on the Digital Credentials Consortium design notes from when we were exploring learner identity options. And I think that this is possibly not super well organized, but I think one thing I wanted to call out was they've also observed in the SVIP program that DID methods that you might want to use on the issuer side, you know, things that represent organizations, might be different from what you want on the learner side, where you might want more privacy preserving characteristics. The other thing is that, you know, long term, you don't want the learner to be locked in to an issuer platform. So that would so basically a lot of this builds up towards DID web might be a good method to use for issuers. That's, and when I say good, I also factor in what can you use right now as opposed to something that's maybe more in development. Versus a learner identity, you know, you don't necessarily, it's not necessarily the case that learners are maintaining their own website that they want to keep running, and you know, so there might be another set of options. And I wanted to orient everyone to, I think maybe in another meeting we could sort of go through a more structured presentation of what people are saying so far about different DID methods, but I wanted to call attention to this. Let me see if there's any discussion. Okay, nothing here yet. And so, yeah, those were the main topics that we had for today. Any comments on issuer learner DIDs or any other discussion points from earlier in the conversation? And I wasn't sharing my screen when I thought I was sharing my screen, because that's what I always do. Let me show you what I was talking about. Okay, so this is what I was looking at here. So yeah, these are the DID methods and EDU use cases. That's something that a lot of people are interested in learning out of this group. Marcus has pointed to this DID rubric document, and I've included some links on the design discussion notes from the DCC around learner identity. And it also includes our notes on issuer identity. So I wanted to include all this information for people to get familiar with. And I think we'll come back to this in a future meeting to discuss in depth.
So Kim, what is the problem you're trying to address? Because, you know, I know that there's like 70 DID methods up there right now, but my own intuition is that that will stabilize over time and it will consolidate down to like a few, there will be a few DID methods that are going to win over the rest. So is the concern that you just don't want to exclude DID methods that you feel don't meet certain parameters that are needed by education credentials, or?
No, I think the problem that we've run into is that people just don't, like when we talk about the value of DIDs, implementers just don't know how to start evaluating them. So I think that in the DID rubric document, it starts to lay out a way for evaluating them. I think in these notes down here, the DCC notes specifically, are just our personal interpretations, like what we're deciding at different phases of development, none of these are meant to exclude anything. But one thing that is interesting is that some DIDs like DID peer are not necessarily even meant to serve as the subject of a verifiable credential. So there are some things like that to sort of reduce the search space. Some just aren't meant for longer lived educational verifiable credentials. So I think that people in this group are looking for a way to evaluate DID methods, not to come to consensus on necessarily to come to consensus on a set of DID methods to use or to exclude. Let me see if there's any other comments. Phil, you're up. Phil Long, P1.
First of all, to your comment, Kim, I agree with the sentiment that you're expressing. Pardon me. I run across people in the context of the LER projects who are asking for guidance of that filtering process of the DIDs in terms of give me the subset amongst which I should choose among the 70 or plus that are out there. And so I think that's exactly the right orientation to take this. It's not to choose one, but it's at least to limit the breadth of choice for the particular use case of representing an individual or something else. The second point I wanted to make is in regard to the transitive process problem of image representation. And that is, I think the way that Marty is approaching representing with a Base64 encoded image or of the, in his case, a transcript, that if that was preceded by a quick examination of that document as a to determine if there was embedded URLs or in it, that does two things. That one, it can preserve the integrity of the representation, and two, it keeps it in a relatively slim package within the JSON of the credential itself. So I just wanted to point that out.
Thank you, Phil. I am not seeing anyone else on the queue. I think we could end a few minutes early. So thank you so much, everyone. And as you've noticed, we're meeting weekly now. And if there are ever any topics you want to add to the agenda, feel free to message me in advance. I think next week we might either do a more wallet focused discussion, or we might pull in some DCC specific, some of the DCC pilots that we're working on. So I'm not sure if we've presented them yet in this group. So it'd be good to bring that into the discussion. Thanks, everyone.